Welcome to Share the Bytes, episode 15, Distro of Choice. Hello, Grant.
Ian, how are you?
Doing super fantastic.
Great. We are hunkered down in our home studios.
You certainly are, but we make the best of it, and we're definitely going to start chugging away at more shows now that we have time on our hands, as some would say.
It's good to be back.
Absolutely. Any reason. Okay, so we talked a little bit offline, and for this show, we're going to discuss Linux distros, but specifically our Linux distros of choice, because we know there's a lot out there, and yeah. Some people may feel inundated by all the options. And so I thought I'd talk about my favorite Linux distro, and you could talk about your favorite Linux distro, because I know you just don't have a distro of choice. You are an official ambassador.
That's right, for Fedora, which is the what becomes CentOS and Red Hat Linux. So,
oh, fantastic. So, yeah, well, let's start with that on Red Hat. Why don't you just give us a brief discussion, whether it's a history or introduction on what it does, who they are? That'd be fantastic. And then,
yeah. So, Red Hat is based in North Carolina. They have always had a strong business distribution in the United States of the operating system and of relationships with the businesses. So they're very strong in having a subscription service where they provide patches and updates for corporate use and allow all kinds of vendors to come in and have a stable platform on which to build. So Fedora is the open source version that sort of where all the innovation starts and the bugs are hammered out, and then it is polished up and then released as a commercial product.
Okay. And when you were mentioning the Red Hat for businesses, that's their primary revenue source, correct?
Yeah. I'm not sure what fraction their services are versus the subscriptions, but I think it's the subscriptions that are the goal.
But again, as you said, Fedora is the open source. That's the basically the version for the community that they can download for free, correct?
Right. Yeah. So that's the way it is now. Originally, it was a commercial distribution, and then they kind of spun off this Fedora thing from the main distribution. But it gives more people a chance to contribute and to organize in a way where the bugs can get worked out sooner, and more people can really get their hands in there and help out.
Okay, fantastic. So why do you use Fedora? I mean, what brought you to it?
Well, Fedora, I started using Fedora when I was involved with the One Laptop Per Child project. So they were a sponsor of that project. It's a small little laptop that goes to kids in developing countries for education. One of the first laptops to have a screen that was readable in direct sunlight and outdoors. It's sturdy, field strippable with just a screwdriver. There were a lot of innovations back in, gosh, when was it? 2008 or so? Mm-hmm. When the OLPC, One Laptop Per Child project, got started.
Okay. And what are some of the features in Fedora that you find useful from a day-to-day point of view?
Yeah, Fedora is a Linux distribution with a whole lot of vendors that come in and build on top of it. So it takes the best of the open source and integrates it. And then Fedora is kind of the melting pot where things get worked out on how they all work together and test it. So Fedora is a great way to use the latest and greatest software that may not be available yet in other ways.
Okay, great. Well, I know you also have another distribution to talk about, but before we get to that, let me talk about mine. So I am a big proponent of Linux Mint. Are you familiar with that one?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, I actually started using Linux Mint back when it was, I think, version 6. And this was, 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny. The reason why I went to it, before Linux Mint, I was a Mepis user, and then before that was Mandrake, which became Mandriva. But Linux Mint was actually the only distro at the time that would work on my Asus EPC and then an Acer laptop. So when you talked about one laptop per child, that kind of created this whole movement of ultra portable, small 7-inch, 10-inch screen laptops.
Netbooks,
There we go. Yep. Netbooks. And so, I bought mine from Costco for dirt cheap, had Windows 7 Starter Edition, which couldn't run anything. And because they made a Starter Edition, they wouldn't even allow you to change the Windows background, if I remember correctly on that. So you had to pay extra. So I found Linux Mint, and it was, again, the one version at the time that supported the network drivers and a few other items on there, the touchpad.
The media, codecs and
Correct.
things.
Yep. And that's really how I discovered Linux Mint to begin with. But the reason why I really fell in love with it was they built their distribution off of Ubuntu's base. So using something that was already proven in the ecosystem already, that was stable, it had a lot of backing from Canonical. They just decided, okay, we're going to make Ubuntu for everybody else. That was kind of the theme of Ubuntu done right. It was, I think, one person said it. And the reason why they say Ubuntu done right, again, it's not a dig to Ubuntu since they use them heavily, and Ubuntu is a great distribution as well. They crafted it more along the lines of they knew that in order to entice people from other operating systems, such as Windows, because at the time Windows was more popular,
Right, still is.
they needed to make it as user friendly or as familiar to Windows users at the time. And also with the expectations that everything you could do in Windows, you could do in Linux. And as you said, playing media, so that's the media codecs. Now, they weren't open source, but they were available to download. It wasn't illegal or anything. I mean, they were provided. It's just you couldn't tweak them if you wanted to, the source code. But Linux Mint says, hey, you know what? We're just going to provide them in the base package. So whatever media files you have, you can play them right off the bat.
Yeah, every Mint user is an Ubuntu user
Yes,
underneath. Yeah.
exactly. And so Linux Mint has grown quite a bit. It used to be a distro that every version came out would just be based off of Ubuntu's latest version. And I want to say it was somewhere around Mint version 10, actually, no, not even 10, maybe 12 or 13, that the Linux Mint folks decided to base their distro on Ubuntu's LTS versions, which is, yeah, their long-term support. So every version they have is an LTS. And now what they do is that they'll have about three iterations on an LTS distro. So let's say they've got Linux Mint 20 coming out based on the next LTS, but before that was there a version 19. They have 19.1, 19.2, and 19.3. And then, and that's basically how many versions they release in between Ubuntu's LTS period. So yeah, they jump, so.
So the long-term support versions are released every 2 years, and the cadence of Ubuntu is one of the core philosophies, core tenets of the operating system, is that it releases on time. And so every 6 months there's a release, every 2 years is the LTS, and that rolls right into Mint.
So yeah, it works out great. And then the Mint developers, create add-on packages, features and enhancements to that Ubuntu base. So you'll have things like their backup tool. So it creates automatic snapshots and saves them on a connected drive. So that way you can reverse it from a graphical user interface. Linux Mint also created the Cinnamon Windows Manager, which, again, going back to the idea of trying to entice Windows folks, familiar feelings, but with the traditional Linux enhancements to make things look a little bit nicer, cleaner, stable. Also giving people the ability to customize however they want. So, and then also their patches package management system, you know, since it's a Ubuntu's Debian base. Mm-hmm. You can use Synaptic for package management, but they also have the Mint, I wouldn't call it a store, but it's a menu that basically consolidates the packages to provide them in a more graphical user interface pleasing way, mm-hmm. with pictures, and people can even leave reviews and comments about the software. So it's almost as if you're going to a app store, either on Windows Store or the Apple App Store on their devices. You know, Linux Mint tries to provide a similar experience to that for many users.
Making it easy to install software is important, and so Ubuntu and Debian have their own systems, obviously built on one another. Debian is the base of all of this, and then Ubuntu is built on top of that, and Mint is on top of that, and they try and make it easier and easier, because it hasn't been easy.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of command lines, not the graphical tools like you were mentioning. So that's the draw, and that's the reason for their development and their work, which is greatly appreciated, and hopefully it all gets rolled back in.
Yeah. So so I actually think that segues right into your other distro of choice. And which one is that?
So I've been an Ubuntu member for a long time, and it's sort of the stable, the base that a lot of companies in Europe have standardized on. As well as SUSE, who I used to work for, they have their open SUSE distribution, and Novell was involved with that. And I haven't followed the details closely on the corporate side. I left them a long time ago. But so Ubuntu has been very strong in development of some particular things for the desktop as well as cloud support. So they have really been a strong basis for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's really, one of Ubuntu's greatest strengths is, building that base for other members in the Linux community to build from, and then also providing that cloud infrastructure and building that out. And yeah, I think it's representative of where the technology will be going. And it also shows the kind of how do people adopt Linux? How are they going to use it? From all these options and the latest and greatest that Ubuntu provides.
Right. So there's Mac and there's Windows, and these are commercial operating systems. And then Ubuntu is really trying to focus on making it easy to use for the users for the desktop, as well as their development in the back end. But one of the reasons that Mark Shuttleworth, the founder of Canonical, which is the company behind Ubuntu, one of the reasons he started it was to not the technical barriers to entry for the Debian community were quite high. And so they wanted to do more development and maybe make a few more changes to make it easier to use and provide more commercial support. So that's why Canonical was founded, essentially. I think I got that pretty well.
Yeah.
And
I'll take your word for it.
Well, we've seen these companies and these Linux distributions grow over time. I mean, I started back in Slackware in 1994, mm-hmm. Installing from floppy disks. So, we've seen a lot going on, and I know you've had similar experiences with Linux way back when.
Yep. My first introduction to Linux was somebody on IRC chat room, back in 95 or 96, saying, "Oh, why don't you try Linux? It's a free operating system." And I was running DOS 6.0 at the time and Windows 3.1. So
yeah,
that's when I heard about it, but didn't officially try it until 99. And that actually used a desktop Red Hat distro back then and instantly hooked.
Uh-huh. Yeah, 99 is when I started with SUSE in the United States before it got acquired by Novell and all kinds of changes. But a lot of history back then. We were using... the reason I got into Slackware was because we were using it for a nonprofit that I was working on, a nonprofit internet service provider called the Silicon Valley Public Access Link. And so the technical people were in there, and I was being introduced to this new operating system. I believe it was around that time that I got Windows NT 4.0 certified as well. So I worked in the Windows world a bit, and I wanted to really dig in deeper. And that's one of the reasons I started running Linux, to be able to look and see what's going on under the hood and learn system administration before it was a day job.
Yep. All right, fantastic. So I think that really, kind of covers, at a high level, really, why we like to use Linux, the tools that we use. And certainly I think in the future we'll be going into more detail on some of the other aspects of it. And, hopefully, we'll get some feedback from folks and tell us, what more they want to hear.
Well, one thing I think we should mention, the first I did to Google on it recently, and I found out, oh, what's the best Linux distribution, right? Oh, well, don't forget, we're both using phones that are based on Linux.
Oh, yeah. That's right, Android.
That's right. Android is probably the number one most used and by volume Linux distribution used anywhere in the world. It's on all the Android phones. And even iOS is using a version of BSD Unix underneath its iPhone operating system. So that's another very popular Unix-like operating system that people use and don't even know. And we didn't even mention it until the end here.
Yeah. Well, with that, we will say goodbye for now, but we'll join folks another time, hopefully soon. But until then, great talking to you, Grant.
Take it easy, Ian. Talk to you soon.